Okie doke. So, thank you for coming to Chassidus and psychology and Chassidut, however you want to call it. I wanted to talk today about a very interesting topic, and that is both the Shev de Nechimta, the seven Haftarot of consolation, as well as the Kubler-Ross scale of grieving. Now, what's going on? So, grab a seat. Grab a packet. The Kubler-Ross stages of grieving and consolation of dying. So, famously, in the 1960s, Betsy Kubler-Ross, really in her work with people with terminal illness, observed certain stages that people went through as they were coming to the terms with their illness. Their illness and an imminent demise. What would happen at first would be denial, right? They could not accept the truth. They could not accept that it was happening. Whether it was the diagnosis itself, whether they say, no, the tests are wrong, this isn't happening. This really isn't happening. Afterwards, they would get angry. They would start blaming everybody. It's your fault. It's this fault. It's this one. It's that one. And raging against the situation. After that, they would start to become depressed, right? And depressed, the depression would come to a place. A person becomes emotionally flat, feeling incredibly heavy, tired, not getting joy or pleasure from any of the things that normally they enjoy. They call it anhedonia. And then finally, they would come to a place really of acceptance. They would focus on trying to enjoy the time that they have left, or prepare for death practically, and speaking to loved ones. Move to a state really where that they understand that their death was imminent and there's nothing they really could do to control it. And these stages have really sort of set stage for the way that people perceive that both death and dying, and then also they've been used a little bit out of their context to speak about loss and mourning as a whole, grieving as a whole, not just about a person with terminal illness, chalila, but any time and case where somebody is grieving, where somebody is experiencing loss. Over time, there's been pushback. As with all good theories and all good science, that there's pushback and there's discussion. To begin with, that these stages don't necessarily happen, sequentially. That these are more descriptive versus prescriptive, meaning you can't force somebody to move to another stage. It's just happening the way it's happening, and trying to force them into another place is not really going to help anything at all. Dr. Kubler-Ross said, you should understand that this was also specifically fixed with people who are experiencing terminal illness, and not just talking about any type of loss, although it's been broadened to deal with other types of loss. However, that wasn't necessarily within the realm of her research. But they really have begun to give us a vocabulary to speak about death, to speak about loss, to speak about grieving and mourning, where previously in the greater world it was something that that people didn't want to touch and didn't want to describe. To, so to speak, to have some vocabulary, to have words to talk about it, to be able to say, in the early stages that you can't talk to the person, which is interesting and sort of corresponds in halacha as well to the avelut process, that we're moving through what the idea of meto munach lefanav, right? When a person, lo aleinu, has a death in the family where they are chayav to mourn, they have no positive commandments. They can't eat pork, but they don't make brachot, they don't make brachas, right? They don't put on talis tefillin. Their only job is to bring the dead to burial. And what's interesting is until that point, there's an isur to try to console them. You don't say Hamakom Yinachem Etchem, not until after the funeral. Right? Not until after the funeral. At that point, there's no, what's it called? There's the sense that it doesn't necessarily even feel real. And many times you speak to somebody who's on the way to a levaya of a loved one, they say it doesn't feel real, which very interestingly sort of lines up a bit with that place of denial. Like, it's not like they're playing a game, but they really can't wrap their heads around it. And the stage of aninut is such as well, that there's nothing to say. It's sort of, it's a surreal feeling. And then there's a little bit of that anger piece, right? When a person rips kriya, there's a mitzvah, normally it's a sur to rip clothing. It's called bal tashrit. You're not allowed to tear, to destroy. But there's a mitzvah of kriya. The person, in Yiddish, they say they raise kriya. They rip a garment, you know, in a moment of angst. And in a moment of angst, there's something cathartic in that tearing of the mitzvah of kriya. They'll say the Baruch Dayan HaEmet, and then they'll tear kriya in that moment. And we sort of see part of that anger stage coming out there a little bit also, which is a really, really wild. Now, and then over time, oftentimes we'll see, you know, sometimes there's depression and the pieces of acceptance as well that are coming through in that mourning place also. And that the grief researchers nowadays have added a sixth step, or maybe there's a sixth and a seventh step. I was just reading a book about anxiety being a step in grief also. And as well, there's a place of making meaning, of finding some type of making sense. Much like Viktor Frankl's notion of logotherapy, right? Man's search for meaning, that the search for the logos, they call logos is Latin for meaning. The search for the logos, the search for this fourth dimension of everything, which, by the way, and I'm sure we'll devote a shiur to this later, the notion that both Rabbi Nachman and the Sfas Emes talk about the idea of the Sechel Shebechol Davar. A person's looking for meaning, trying to find the inherent meaning of things. So there are those who add anxiety, there are those who add searching for meaning in these stages as well. But it's very important to understand that these are not necessarily linear. Right? A person doesn't, you know, you can't go and say to a person, well, you should be over this already. There is no over this. There is no, in grieving, I have conversations with people, they've experienced a loss, and sometimes the loss isn't the final loss of a family member, but sometimes it's a loss of potential. A loss of a relationship, where there's been a bad breakup, and the person's grieving, right? When a dream dies also, a person grieves. Grieves for the loss that they had. This is all, it's all present and it's all true. And there's nothing necessarily sequential that happens as a result of this. There's no, sometimes there'll be easier days and harder days. But these stages are always present. And it's a reality. Anytime a person has a loss, a person loses a job, a person, you know, a relationship fails, lo aleinu, a person loses a family member, of course, these are different amounts of, you know, of severity. But to some level or another, there's an expression of loss. There's a feeling of loss which is there. And we have to allow ourselves to, you know, to grieve over that also and give ourselves the time. Again, in Halakha, in the Torah, we sort of move through to a certain extent and have certain baselines, right? So we have the idea of the aninut to shiva to shloshim to the year, right? And then to the end of the fall, the 11 months and the year. And there's differing amounts of grieving that goes on through each one. But still, you know, but still, there will be up days and down days, even if the restrictions get less as the time moves on. A lot of the restrictions you'll see in Rabbi Lam's book, The Jewish Way Through Mourning. A lot of those stages in halacha, it's really because in the play, what you're prohibited from doing, it just doesn't feel appropriate. You know, it just doesn't feel appropriate at those moments to do whatever is asur. Right? It's not. I don't have to tell you not to go to a party. You know, in the week of Shiva, it just feels wrong. Right? It just feels like wrong. Is how. How can I do that? And then as you move forward into the year, as time passes on, the restrictions lessen because there's a certain, the wound never heals. But to a certain extent, some of the edge fades ever so much. The edge on it fades ever so much. But there's a process of mourning and to a certain extent, a process of consolation and coming to terms and, you know, and healing to one level or another. I want to share with you then something which is interesting. And Soloveitchik really, you know, deals with this notion quite a bit. It's based, of course, in Poskim, in the Rishonim, the notion of the old Avelos. Right? The old Avelos that we find for both Sfira and the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and Tisha B'Av itself, we enact an Avelos that happens not over a loss that recently occurred, but a loss which occurred a long time ago. It's a loss that there's a memory of, as the Paitan says, Kina Aira Laman Azkira. Right? I will awaken a dirge so that I should remember that the old Avelut works backwards. It doesn't march, have the trauma happening immediately and then, and then lessening. It goes backwards. The trauma strengthens as time moves forward for the 3 weeks. It's, you know, just a little bit of the 11 months of mourning, switching then into a little bit of Shloshim Shiva into like the day of death. Of Tisha B'Av itself, that's and the descriptions in the Gemara are of crying on Tisha B'Av as if Meito Mutalifanav, like as if the dead is sitting behind us. And then all of a sudden there's a switch, and what's funny is that we sort of forget about it as we were absorbed into the energy of Elul, but then there's a switch. We go from the 3 haftarot of trouble, the Tlata de Paraniuta, to the Shiv de Nechemta, the 7 of consolation. And then the Trey, the Tevusa, the 2 of Tshuva. And we go from 3 of trouble, 7 consolation, 2 of Tshuva. Something changes. So the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av is, of course, Shabbat Nachamu. And we know about Shabbat Nachamu. It's a good getaway weekend. The hotels are making a lot on it. They have all the advertisements in the Jewish papers for a Shabbat Nachamu getaway, all the different places you can go. Everyone says, you're staying in for Shabbat Nachamu? Who stays down in the city for Shabbat Nachamu? That's crazy. You're talking crazy. Yeah, everyone's got a getaway. But Shabbat Nachamu is an incredibly intense time, you know, of amelioration. So I'd like you to look for a moment. We have the first source, I say pull mine backwards, the first source from the B'nai Sascha. B'nai Sascha, one of the great Galician / Polish / going to be Hungarian rabbis, as his family go to Hungary. He wrote many Sfarim, a very, very prolific author. He wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot, a commentary on the Torah, and most famously, he's known for the B'nai Sascha, which is a two-volume work on the months and the holidays, where it goes by month and all the holidays that are and special days that are present, and he speaks about it. So he, in the entry on Nechama, he says, V'od amru razal shel malei nechamot shemasar kadosh baruch hu leneviav lo hayu yicholin Yisrael lisbol ol hagalutz aval kevan shenechtavu nechamot ayidei neviim hinam baim Yisrael abati kinesi abati midrash v'roim divrei neviim v'hem minachamim. So what happens is that if it wasn't for the fact that Hashem had said Nachmu Nachmu Ami and told the Nevi'im to console the Jewish people, we never would be able to get over it. That normal march of time that Kubler-Ross seems to be talking about, that time that seems to heal all wounds, that we would never have been able to get up from it. If it hadn't been for Hashem saying, Nachmu Nachmu Ami, go console my people, I'm giving you the power to console my people. Without this consolation, it would not be able to move forward. We would not be able to move forward. We wouldn't have this ability. Additionally, he says in a different letter over here at the bottom, and you understand that. Ubezet havina al nachon shekol nechamot asher amru Hashem yitbarach leviyav al finesis Yisrael hinehem divrei Hashem yitbarach ba'atzmo behen nechamot betuchot. Right? And we have to understand that we go and we read Yeshayahu. We read Yeshayahu all these 7 weeks. It's not like we're just reading literature. We would have said, the rabbis would have said, oh, you know what? During the weeks after Tisha B'Av, why don't you read a sonnet? It's a poetic reading, it's nice. And we say this in the Brachot, that these are the words of the Navi, that Hashem is going to console us. And that these words have powers of consolation to let us know that's one of the big avlas of Kiddush Club. I'm not opposed to Jews eating nice things on Shabbos. But to leave during the Haftorah, it's a problem. Not just a halachic problem, you should hear the Haftorah. Because the Haftorah, the takana of the Haftorah, and especially these weeks, there's a beautiful sicha from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein in a sefer on the Haftorahs, where he shows this from the halacha, that all of the rest of the year, with the exception of these 12 Shabbatot of 3 weeks, 7 weeks, 2 weeks, it's always, you're supposed to read a half Torah that corresponds to the Parsha. These weeks, you need to read the Haftarot of Trouble and the Haftarot of Consolation, the Haftarot of Tshuva. Because this is what we need to hear. Because the Haftorah really is a device, but we need to hear the words of the Navi, and it's a wild idea that even in halacha, the halacha of the haftarah is a halacha of hearing the words of the Navi. And you look at the brachot, that's what it's saying. Right? We're saying that Kadosh Baruch Hu sent us Nevi'im, and his Nevi'im had a message, and the message is for us. The message is what we need to hear. We need to hear these words of consolation in halacha. Not just, you should read this. We need to have the feeling of consolation. And what's the consolation is we go and we read these words and saying, and you read them, and Kadosh Baruch Hu says, yes, I understand, Tisha B'Av was tough. The 3 weeks were tough. Those keynotes get pretty dark. Right? Those keynotes are pretty dark. But there's going to come a time of consolation. It's going to come a time where it's going to be very, very clear that you're my nation, that I haven't forsaken you. And even the process where we don't want to hear it, there's a beautiful midrash that also even it says in some of the Chumashim that what happens is that first Hashem says that to the Nevi'im, go console my people, but the people say back to the Nevi'im, we don't want to hear it, right? And that's the second haftarah. Vayomer Tzion Azveni Hashem Vashem Shachani. Hashem forgot about me. And then the next week, the Nevi'im go to Anya Sara Lenuchama, that the storm-tossed one is not consoled, right? So then Kadosh Baruch Hu said, goes back and says, okay, you need to hear that it's me. Roni,
Shalom.
How are we doing?
Just try to help. This is for Chop from Chop Chop here. Ah. This is our main here, vegetable, plate, everything here. And Hashem bless all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Right, so without all of that, right, if we hadn't heard these words of consolation, we couldn't move on. And even in the process, the Nevi'im are coming, and they tells us this whole story that we don't want to hear it. We don't want to listen. We're not ready to accept that. We see that there's a progression of mourning that we still haven't let go of that pain. Again, we see that very clearly from the Kubla Ros steps. It's a process. You can't just come and say, okay, be consoled. We're broken. We're sad that there's something there. There's something that we need to work through a bit. And as a result, you know, that's the whole seven haftarot are working in a stage. Anytime you see the number seven, you should realize that we're on a progression, right? Judaism is very big on the progression of sevens. Shemitah, Yovel, Shabbat, right? All these ideas, even building up the sixth month of Elul into the seventh month of Tishrei. We're always about the it's a pattern which is all the time there. So then I just want to share with you a little bit of a teaching from Rav Hillel Paritcha, as they call him, Rav Hillel Paritcha. He's one of the great students of the first, second, and third Chabad Rebbe's. He was present through all the lifetime of all three. They refer to him as half a chassid because the other half was a rebbe. His discourses are really like fantastic and incredibly meaningful, and you know I find a certain connection to them. There's one discourse is called Issa v'Psikta. The Issa v'Psikta, which is where I've given you some of the pages, is that he's commenting on that specific teaching from the Psikta, from the Halachic Midrash, that talks about these haftarot, and he's commenting on these haftarot. It's a kind of long mimer. They just released a sefer from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, where he is going and teaching this Hasidic discourse to a bunch of Jews in Muncie, and he gives all these explanations to it, enough that it became a book this thick, but in actuality the actual mimer itself is like six pages, so you know, so you can imagine he has a lot to say about it. But I just wanted to take a couple of the last paragraphs that dealt with it. So he says, "Lachen miramzim ze bechol shana v'shana." And therefore, every year we hint at this. Ki nitchadesh befrat chiyut al shana befrat. That it happens every year. This effect is happening to us. We have this experience of loss, right? Every year, and consolation every year. V'yesh bo mikol ma sheyesh bechlal shita alfei shnin dehayalma. That for all the years, right? All of the years, we're constantly re-experiencing the same phenomenon. We're experiencing the same Cherut on Pesach. We're experiencing the same Matan Torah on Shavuot. We're experiencing the same Avelut on Tisha B'Av. The Hilchach Maftir, life before loss, and then the life after loss. The Luchot, the first Luchot, the Luchot of our lives before the loss. And then the breaking of these Luchot, of course, is the loss. And then the life which comes afterwards is this new set of luchot. We don't remember about Yom Kippur enough because the fast day and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur sort of overshadow all of it, but we forget that the real essence of Yom Kippur is the giving of the second luchot. That's what really the day was about. We got the second luchot, Hashem forgave us, we were able to move on, and we would continuously have that effect. The luchot that break on Shivasar B'Tammuz then are given to us again on Yom Kippur. right? It's the end of a process that started months ago. It's 12 weeks of this entire process, starting with Shiva Esrei B'Tammuz and ending with Yom Kippur. Or usually just do 3 weeks. There's 3 weeks, and then there's the Yom of Nerayim. And we don't realize that there's this whole, what we call a hemshech. It's a whole longitudinal like study of our lives. The breaking of the luchot, right? The loss of all that potential, the grieving, the avelut, which is there. And then the giving of the new luchot, there's a new, different world. It's not the same world. It's a world with broken luchot. Both sets of luchot are resting in the Aron together. If you can imagine, that's a strong symbolism. The broken shards of my old life and the full luchot of the new life, they're there together. Right? They don't replace 100% because they're still there. But there are new luchot also. When we think about that in terms of that the imagery, in terms of grief and moving on and consolation, you know, like we said, the pain doesn't go away, but it changes. It dulls ever so slightly. We somehow absorb some amount of consolation. That's why at a Shiva house we say Amakim Yinacham Eschem, right? Or Min Hashamayim Tenuchamu if you're Sephardic. And that's why in Tisha B'Av, at the end of Tisha B'Av, we say Nachem Hashem. Up until that point, we couldn't accept consolation. And now we begin. The Sfardim, even at Tisha B'Av Mincha, already start saying Nachmu Nachmu Ami by Mincha. It's a slightly different halachic thought, but that idea is like the slow steps of coming back together. And turning the page, the three lines from the top. That also we understand that the life that we had, the luchot, the Torah that happens as a result of the breaking of the luchot, is a different Torah that we got, right? If we wouldn't have had Sefer Yehoshua, we wouldn't have had Mishnayot, we wouldn't have Mishnah, he says halachot, Mikra, Mishnah, halachot v'agadot. All of that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for that horrible episode of the breaking of the luchot. Ki yadu hamashal bekiruv makom maspik ner katan lahayir, aval lahayir berichuk berichuk makom tzarich avukah gedola. When you're very close, you need a little light, but when you get further away, you need a much, much bigger light. So what happens is, as a result, things came out of it, a new life emerged, and it takes time to rebuild that life. The Torah Shebaal Peh is that rebuilt life. Is that life which is not the life of the life of the full luchot that you'll never forget Torah ever, that what we got in Har Sinai will stick with you forever. It's a different Torah. It's a different way. It's the same Torah, but it's a different way of receiving that Torah. It's a different way of experiencing that Torah. And therefore, so lachen kishenitorer b'makor b'chinat luchot achronot hitorot hu siba deistalkut lachen nishbru luchot rishonot istalkut b'chlal hu gimel b'chinat tzlat mochin chabad k'mashal. So what happened, as we know, so whenever we talk in the there are famous patterns, right? There are famous concepts and famous patterns that we see throughout the Torah, like, you know, like at the end of the Seder, who knows one, I know one, who knows that, right? All the different numbers. The numbers are meaning-based, not just quantitative. They're not just quantitative identifiers. They're also qualitative identifiers. Numbers mean in the Torah. Three oftentimes refers to the three cognitive processes of chokhmah, idea, bina, understanding, and a conceptual building. Mevin davar mitoch davar, deduction. And dat, which means to then connect the abstract to the concrete. So each one of those haftarot of trouble is us losing one of the levels of the old Torah, and which creates our feeling of emptiness and mourning from it. And he says that's why every week becomes harder, more machmir, the avilut, as it goes. Achla besof tisha b'av, that we sit lonely, forlorn. But what happened is that at the same time, It sort of had to end so that a new world could begin as well. Right? Uveze mitnachmim nishmot Yisrael. So then, and then slowly, as we begin to understand and see the new world, that's our process of nechama also. That something else, something different is emerging. And part of the consolation which is emerging, where that world of acceptance and making meaning towards the end, there was a breakage. And that breakage is painful. And the new life that you emerge with is something else. It's not something we ever want to go through. And at the same time, that's what we're existing through. So that's, you know, just a little bit, you know, of what lies in this pattern. And then ultimately, we really can truly grasp everything is the last two haftarot of tshuva, right? The haftarah of Dirshu Hashem. And tshuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha. He refers to it as the lower tshuva and the higher tshuva. Maybe it's tshuva miyira, tshuva miava. Maybe it's tshuva on an action level and tshuva on a conceptual level. It's not just, okay, let me correct what's going on over here, but let me attach to the source of all life. Let me reattach. Let me see something bigger and greater. We should taste the rays of nechama, right? The rays of consolation, which we started to feel now. We're already now up to week number, I think we're week number four, week number five of seven. Rosh Hashanah is on its way. Rosh Hashanah comes after the seventh haftarah, the seventh of consolation. So again, we're completing the set. We have Rosh Hashanah and then the two of tshuva. May we merit, you know, to the time that we don't have to go through any mourning processes, that we don't need to go through. But moreover, that we should hear the words of consolation of the Navi. We should feel the consolation of the Navi emerging, that whatever was happening, all the brokenness in our life, because Tisha B'Av reflects all of that brokenness. When we break a glass under the chuppah, we say, but Yerushalayim is so great now. They have katzefet and everything, right? So why do we need to mourn for Yerushalayim? The streets are so beautiful, but there's still pain in the world. And there's still pain in the world. There's still something missing. Right? We don't have the Beit HaMikdash in its fullness now. So there's still pain. And we're still yearning to hear the words of the Navi, that we should feel mitnachamim. We should all feel consoled. We should feel that consolation and see the new reality which is emerging. And of course, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe then, as Reb Hillel did, ties us into the ultimate Geulah, that through all the years of Galut was those years of brokenness. And the Geulah which emerges out of that, of hearing the Navi's consolation, to see a whole new world order. And when that will happen, we'll see that all of this Galut, all the exile, really, in some crazy way, had all been to bring us to this point, to a new, beautiful new world. And so we should see it in our eyes very soon. Thank you all so much for joining me here.